Welcome again, everybody. I'm really happy you're here. My name is Melissa Carvel-Zimmer, and I'm the UMA's Director of Ministries and Programs. And I'm really happy to be hosting tonight a session called Exploring Veterans Administration Chaplaincy. And we're very fortunate to have the Reverend Sarah Lammert here with us, who is the federal endorser for federal chaplaincies with the Unitarian Universalist Association, and two VA chaplains who prepared in advance and agreed to be here. That's Reverend Liz Murphy and Reverend Rena Shear, and others who have relevant experience to share. And all of you who are coming to add your experience if the moment is appropriate later in the session, there may be opportunities to comment or ask questions. But for now, I will say welcome again. We're happy that you're with us, and I will turn it over to Sarah.
Everybody, so just to introduce myself again, I'm Sarah Lammert. I serve as the Federal Chaplaincies Endorser for the UUA, which means that I recruit, support military, VA, and Federal Bureau of Prisons chaplains. I'm really happy that we have one of our military chaplains here, Glenn. It's nice to have you. And one of my goals is to see more of our Unitarian Universalist clergy serving in these locations. I think we have a lot to offer to the chaplaincy in these particular settings. And I hope that tonight will give you all some information that might help you get on your way if this is something that you could imagine for yourself in your future. I am mostly going to be just facilitating and let our more knowledgeable people speak, and that is Liz and Rena. We also have here tonight Chris Antal, who also serves as a VA chaplain. And Chris, feel free to chime in if you have some information that we're missing or at any point. We're just really glad to have you. What we're going to cover tonight is what's required. What are the requirements for chaplaincy? How can you best strategize if you want to get a job at the VA? What are some of the kinds of positions, different kinds of spiritual care that you can offer at the VA? People will share about their very different job settings. We'll talk a little bit about the training that's available, both in formation and then after you become a VA chaplain. And Rena and Liz will share a little bit about the day-to-day joys and challenges and share kind of a vignette for you, a case vignette, so that you can get a little bit of insight into what it's like to be a VA chaplain. All right, so Liz and Rena, what is required to be a VA chaplain? What do you have to have in terms of training?
Well, I'll jump in. And Rena, please add on. So I went through this process fairly recently. I've been a staff member at my VA facility in Loma Linda, California, which is close to San Bernardino and Riverside, about an hour from Los Angeles. And I did a residency and fellowship there. So, in terms of requirements, VA is now requiring you to have 4 units of CPE. So, wanting that full 4 units, which can be completed through a residency or through various 1 unit or 2 unit internships. And then also board certification. So, the federal government does accept different certifying bodies. Obviously, ACPE is one we think about a lot, but there's also a National Association of VA Chaplains that also certifies and is kind of growing in terms of its membership and reach. And then there are many, many others in terms of differing religious bodies or related to religious bodies. Rena, do you want to add to that?
Sure, Liz. I think definitely the 4 units of CPE. It's also important that you are through your process, and at least at our VA, you need to be ordained by the ecclesiastically, whoever is endorsing you, so ordination. And I also, just like Liz, I did my very first unit of CPE. I'm here in Cleveland at the Cleveland VA, which is a pretty large medical center in addition to having 13 clinics in Northeast Ohio. So it's a pretty large VA. I did my initial CPE unit and then really became pretty intrigued by the whole VA system and ended up doing my residency year here. And I did half of a fellowship specializing in mental health and then was hired on. But one of the qualifications, this was 8 years ago, was that you did have to be through the process of ordination to be hired on.
Yeah, so certainly working with Sarah on your endorsement is very important in that process as well. Yeah.
And the requirement for endorsement for the purpose of VA chaplaincy is to be in fellowship. What kind of benefit is there to doing a residency at the VA as opposed to somewhere else if you want to get a job in the VA system?
I think it's very important because it immediately puts you in the pipeline. And even if you are not hired during your residency or fellowship year, and I have been told that every VA, if you've seen one VA, you've only seen one VA, but according to two different chiefs that I have worked underneath, chief chaplains, even if you don't get hired on in your residency or fellowship, you are still in the pool where they can do something called a direct hire, which is very advantageous to the person who is applying for the position.
Exactly. Yeah, and I think Rena and I shared that experience in that we did our residencies, and I also did half of a fellowship at the VA where I now work. And it is my sense that having VA-specific CPE units is really, really helpful to kind of getting into that federal chaplaincy system, which can seem really difficult to kind of get through the door initially, and doing your clinical training there can be one really helpful way to understand more about the system, to get to know chaplains within the system already. And like Rena said, yeah, giving you that ability to be directly appointed to a chaplaincy position, as opposed to going through the very large USA Jobs application portal, which anyone, right, can kind of apply through there if you're willing to get through the many pages of application. But therein is a wait system for your application kind of ultimately landing on a manager's desk. So the direct appointment can be really helpful in building relationships and all of those things.
I did see there's a question. I apologize. We are throwing around language that we're so familiar with. So a residency would be PG1 in terms of clinical pastoral education language. So it would be program year one. So after you do an initial unit of CPE, which is required for our denomination for ordination, a year-long fellowship would be four more units, where you would be doing clinicals and doing the CPE process. And at many VAs, and Liz, it may be different at yours, but at ours, the fellowship year would be a PG2, program year two, and you would be expected to have the fundamentals of chaplaincy under your belt. You may have even gone through some specific training, but the second year you would be kind of focusing or specializing in an area. So I specialized in mental health at my VA. Liz, what did you specialize in?
Yeah, I kind of zeroed in on some of my outpatient populations a little more deeply, sort of women veterans and LGBTQ veterans. Yeah. And I think, Rena, I don't, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think they're transitioning to calling it second year residency. They're getting rid of this idea of fellowship, is what I heard within my facility. I don't know if that's system wide, but yeah, essentially that full year of CPE training is that residency. And then essentially the fellowship or second year would just be another full year, four more units.
Thank you. And Chris, just quickly, is there, as a former service member who was served in the military, is there any advantage for veterans in applying at the VA?
Hi, everyone. You get a veteran's hiring preference. It's 5 points, at least last I checked. And then if you have a disability rating, it's like a 10-point hiring preference. And that's if you're going through the USA Jobs portal, which can kind of bump up your application so that it gets in the final cut.
So there's a USA Jobs portal that people should look at when they're at that point. Great. Okay, thank you. Anything, we're going to take time at the end for all your questions too, just so you know there will be time, because I know, Patty, you had a question too. Let's move on though to the diversity of positions. And could you talk about what kinds of positions in spiritual care is available in the VA chaplaincy?
I'll jump in.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, I feel like we're playing rock, paper, scissors. Sorry, Rena. The thing that I was struck with starting in the VA is certainly there's bedside chaplaincy in the inpatient units, any other kind of hospital space. But just the vastness of the outpatient population as well. And again, if you've seen one VA, you've seen one VA. So I can't speak across all, but I know in my work, there is quite a focus on outpatient care as well. So spiritual care for folks in all arenas within that veteran patient population. So similarly, we have several clinics out in different communities as well as a women's clinic and an LGBTQ clinic. So I would say a good 30% of my work is focused on those outpatient populations. And for me, that's particularly working with women veterans and LGBTQ veterans. So there's a lot of group spiritual care that happens as well in terms of my own work in that outpatient setting. So weekly groups, just sort of spirituality support spaces, which has been a real gift to be able to be in that space as well as the one-on-one space or space with, a veteran and their family or loved ones. So that for me is really enlivening in having kind of those differences. My days, I can go from working on the floor, kind of doing my rounds with the various inpatients and then hosting, for example, a women's spirituality group in the afternoon. And there's been, as we'll discuss later, a lot of gifts and challenges with that balance and trying to prioritize and figure out, how to manage my time and days. But for me, that was one thing that was really energizing and exciting, is that there seemed to be room for me to try new things, grow in different ways, and kind of offer care in many different contexts and settings based on the person or a group of people.
I think it's interesting. I've been reflecting on this, thinking about this webinar. In the last several years at our VA, chaplaincy has changed a great deal. When I was a student and then when I was hired on, I think we had 7 or 8 staff chaplains. Now we have 12. We have 2 openings, but there's a hiring pause right now. But chaplaincy has gotten much more clinical and specialized in the last 5 or 6 years at our VA. And we are focusing much, much more outpatient. So when I first started, all of my care was inpatient, and now about 75% of my care is outpatient. We have a person who strictly focuses on grief, and it's primarily outpatient, and she does individual sessions with people in groups. We have someone who just specializes in suicide prevention. We have a woman's health chaplain who is in our woman's clinic. We have a whole health chaplain. I cover our inpatient psych unit, so about 25% of my time is inpatient, and then I often follow those veterans as they're moving out into the community, And then I do probably about 50% of my time is working outpatient with our PTSD clinic and running our moral injury groups and doing one-on-one moral injury care. On our inpatient unit, I do a group that is Qigong and meditation. It's a whole health bridge group. And then my outpatient groups are not general spirituality, but they're very focused on actually what Chris pioneered, which is moral injury. And those groups I co-facilitate with a mental health provider. So it's a lot of co-facilitation. I've just seen enormous changes in the last few years. And I think it's going to get more clinical as chaplaincy itself is getting more evidence-based and more research-based. And at the VA, you know, the big three priorities are suicide prevention and women's health and moral injury and PTSD, so more trauma related. So it's really a fascinating place to be.
Thank you so much. That gives a lot of insight. And Chris, do you want to add anything about what you do in your setting and this work that you've pioneered?
Well, I've been in Philadelphia since 2015. I'm in a Protestant chaplain slot, even though I'm not a Protestant chaplain. So our facility is somewhat archaic still. And position descriptions, we have Roman Catholic chaplains, we have Protestant chaplains, we have a Jewish chaplain, and we have a palliative care chaplain, which is kind of a more specialized area. There are now postings for mental health chaplains at other facilities. I've also just recently seen like the first like telehealth chaplain positions ever advertised. Like you can actually work remotely as a chaplain now in the VA. These are appearing. So just in terms of the range of positions, but Philadelphia, I've been fortunate to be part of the integrative mental health program, which is a national center based in Durham that has been advocating integration of chaplaincy and mental health care. So I was part of a year-long cohort and trained in that, and the priority issues for collaboration between mental health and chaplaincy are suicide prevention and moral injury. And at my facility, when I came here, chaplains weren't involved in either of those areas. So I've been able to, from my pigeonhole as a Protestant chaplain, kind of break out of that and have the opportunity to, like Liz was saying, there's a lot of room and I think it's case by case with your facility, like the kind of culture and the support you have from your supervisor. And I've been fortunate in Philadelphia to have support from my supervisor from the institution to do some innovative work. And So I work with the high risk team, a suicide prevention team. I was just invited to be the co-lead of a postvention suicide team that reaches out to families and employees actually after a suicide completion. And I've been half of the team, myself and a staff psychologist, that's launched a moral injury program here, which has been very personally rewarding, not only just leading groups, but I've had the opportunity to publish about our work and present at conferences, both in the United States and overseas. And those, you know, that was funded travel by the VA for the most part. And I do some teaching also. I'm able to teach, have an appointment at a university nearby here. So
Thank you so much. Is there anything else that anyone wants to add, or should we move to training opportunities, both in formation and after you become a VA chaplain? So should I just call on someone this time? Let's let you jump in.
Sure. And Sarah, your training opportunities in general. So yeah, I guess, you know, the VA in general is an educational institution. So essentially every discipline has trainees that are coming through the various facilities at any given time. Like us as chaplain interns and chaplain residents as well. So there is an emphasis on education and training. I know for me, you know, we have an education budget, and I know my chief has really tried to push for more in that way, really trying to lean on those resources a bit for the chaplains in my department, which I really appreciate. So I've been able to go to a couple of different conferences and trainings funded by that VA education budget. And mostly around evidence-based practice, kind of like Rena was mentioning, that's very much becoming embedded with our understanding of chaplaincy, certainly in the hospital and clinical realm. And so I was able to do that. It was kind of fun. It was three of us chaplains and all nurses. So we learned a lot about medicine, but they also were really warm and welcoming to bringing us in as interdisciplinary partners, which I appreciate. So we got to do that and got more connected then afterward with our evidence-based practice kind of learning and teaching team within my facility. So that's been a great opportunity. I'm also now a special emphasis program manager, which is another fun VA title, essentially within EEO, essentially committees that support employees of different interest groups or identity groups rather. So I'm part of the LGBT committee. So I'll be going to a training for those program managers through Big VA in a few months as well. Yeah, there's just a lot of opportunities as chaplains. I think as residents, it really depends on your supervisor and your facility. But I know folks in our program now, they do lots of really cool field trips. They went to March Air Force Base and go to a few different places. They're able to really do that kind of professional development learning as well. So I've kind of focused on research and evidence-based practice a bit in my own kind of practice, but there are so many different specialties and topics, as Rena was sharing, that are really open to us if you're able to get that budget approval on your topic.
I've been overwhelmed at the training opportunities that the VA offers as a teaching facility and through the special education funds. You know, there's a program called Whole Health that is somewhat new. It's about maybe 5 years old. Through Whole Health, I've been trained as a Reiki master, trained in Qigong, trained in aromatherapy, trained in eye rest yoga nidra, which are all things that I'm able to use with my veterans. Just the variety of webinars on all of these clinical topics. And then, you know, really this wonderful program that Chris talked about, which through Integrative Mental Health, this 3-year program that you could apply to, and it's open to DOD and VA chaplains. And you work 18 months learning three different evidence-based practices and writing case studies and learning all about different clinical practices, psychology and psychiatry. And then the last 18 months, you're at Vanderbilt. So you're getting your DMIN and you are you're working on cohorts and you are attending webinars with Vanderbilt professors. And it has been an incredibly rich learning experience for me. I've met DoD chaplains, and so I've had such a better understanding of the role of the chaplain and the veterans I'm now serving and what they had when they were active duty. And you're able to specialize and really hone in on a topic that is important to you. So I think the ongoing educational opportunities really are endless. Like Chris and Liz, I've been very fortunate that the three chiefs I've had, you know, as long as I get my job done and my numbers, I can be as creative and implement as many new programs as I can. So I do painting, I do clay, I do a lot of kind of somatic practices with veterans to help them move through whatever it is that they are disconnected from. And to kind of go into this place where they can feel more safe and authentic. It's really been very beneficial to my chaplaincy and just my sense of ministry in this place. I think because the VA, veterans are coming here for life. So there are veterans I now know for 9 years, and I've seen them go through different life events. So there's this beautiful sense of congregational ministry at a VA because you are seeing your people over and over and over again. There's a really beautiful continuity to the ministry, I've found.
Yeah, I would agree with that, Rena. Absolutely.
Thank you so much. Chris, is anything you want to add to that?
Well, I didn't do the whole 3-year thing with Vanderbilt, but I did a year. But I would just add that in Philadelphia, this is a major teaching hospital. We have affiliation with University of Pennsylvania. So we always have, and I think, you know, nationwide, I mean, if I don't know exactly the statistics, but certainly the majority of physicians in the United States have done at least some of their training in a VA medical center. So there's an opportunity here just to encounter people in their learning process. And often on a pretty regular basis, I get invited to speak to nursing students who are doing their rotation here. About spiritual care in general and about moral distress, moral injury. I have opportunities to speak with the psychology interns. We have psych interns rotating through here. We have social worker like interns. So there's that element as well. And there's just a ton of research money going into VA. It's an invigorating work environment for me. I get kind of bored in congregational ministry, but I don't get too bored here. Sometimes I do, but that's feeds me.
Thank you all so much. I just did one unit of CPE in a VA hospital, and I was amazed at the kinds of opportunities I was invited into. I was assigned to the psych ward in the hospital I was in, and I was able to participate because it's such an open training environment. I was able to participate in group therapy, be part of the staffing of group therapy, all sorts of things that I would not have expected in a one unit CPE. So I thought it was a great training environment too.
I wanted to add on to something that both Liz talked about, and that's this idea of interdisciplinary care. I think that as spirituality in general, kind of globally, and at least in the United States, is exploding. I feel as though our mental health colleagues and nurses and people are becoming much more intrigued by chaplains and seeing that we do more than just sacramental care. And so there are a lot of really interesting models where we are working interdisciplinarily with nursing, or particularly with psychology and social work. And that's really That has been a real place of joy for me because I've learned so much from them, and I feel like they're also learning from us. And there are just many ways to utilize that kind of care to help the veteran in front of us. It's a really beautiful thing.
Thank you so much. Our last area before we move to questions is really just to ask you all, what is your day-to-day like? What are some of the joys and challenges? And can you give us a little vignette that will give us some insight into what that's like?
Rena, I'll let you go first this time.
So before I give a vignette, I think it's important. One thing we haven't talked about is how important self-care is in chaplaincy, just as it's very important in congregational ministry. I think if you're doing a residency at a VA, you're going to see people with deep suffering that is different often than the suffering you might find at a private or a different kind of public hospital. And so I think self-care is very important because some of the stories that you will be hearing in your chaplaincy, it's very easy for there to be vicarious trauma. So that self-care element is really important. So, a typical day for me would be inpatient and outpatient. Running groups and individuals, my last visit that I just had, it was an individual session with a veteran that I have worked with on and off for many years. And he's currently in our really in-depth processing group for moral injury. We're doing we do specific groups, well, one for combat and one for military sexual trauma. And we have groups for men and women. And so this is a group for male only veterans who have experienced moral injury with military sexual trauma. And so as part of this 12-week group, they are sharing kind of the loss and grief, the emotional loss and grief in terms of their relationships with themselves and others and God, whoever their, whatever is most sacred to them. And so I was working with him as he is sharing the story of his trauma with me and then working through what are all these places of loss and grief and what is part of his lament and what does he want to share to this other group of men who have also experience a similar kind of trauma. Then right after that, I'm on the phone with someone who is living with schizophrenia, who just got diagnosed with cancer. And I know him from our inpatient unit. And then I talk to him every 2 weeks for about 15 minutes. And so just being with him on the phone and comforting him, then I get another phone call with a veteran living with PTSD who's having delusions that that we all have a piece of God in ourselves, but he has a bigger piece than other people. So listening to his story, trying to make, first of all, everyone we talk to, making sure they're not suicidal, right? So doing those screens, talking to this veteran, making sure that he's safe, he's in a volatile relationship. So that was my afternoon. Just some small vignettes.
Yeah. Thanks, Rena. And yeah, your encouragement off the top is very much heard and something I try to practice as well. I have a little sticky note on one of my monitors that says, is this sustainable? Because it's a question I need to ask myself a lot. And that question of vicarious trauma, it's come up for other colleagues in terms of needing to take longer breaks, kind of leave to tend to their own kind of wounds as it relates to providing that care and holding those stories. For me, slightly different context, but kind of similar. It's both in and out, right? Inpatient and outpatient. So I have an inpatient unit that I'm sort of the lead chaplain, and so sort of doing my rounds with folks, you know, just getting them educated on the role of the chaplain service, sitting down and talking with them, getting kicked out, all of that stuff, kicked out of the room, giving them a chance to say no, which is important. And then, yeah, so like today I was doing that. And then I have a patient who, or a veteran who is part of a couple different groups that I'm facilitating, and who had to come in to the hospital and actually was intubated. So I've been kind of journeying with her the last couple days in the ICU, trying to provide some extra care. She, you know, can't speak, is really uncomfortable. Thankfully, she was extubated today. Looks like she's on the up and up, but you know, pretty traumatic experience for her. Just coming in with kind of a really bad cold and then being intubated, and so having that longer relationship, as Rena was mentioning, is really a joy. I think ultimately being able to kind of journey alongside someone over years, you know, is really kind of a special quality and ability that we have as VA chaplains. That's where they get their healthcare, right? Like for the rest of their life, this is a place that they'll be coming to. And then, you know, people just walking in. We have a lot of walk-ins in our office, just wanting to talk to a chaplain, or, you know, or asking for housing resources, asking for all sorts of things, a bus pass, you know, just the day-to-day of folks who are around kind of coming in for support. So kind of offering care in whatever ways we can there. And then today I hosted our LGBT support group, which in terms of a vignette, has been such a joy and a challenge. I think talking about kind of moral distress and moral injury, you know, service members, the long history of the US military with LGBTQ service members is long and difficult. And so just having that space for them to be able to share their experiences of being kicked out, of experiencing military sexual trauma, of experience kind of, you know, anti-LGBTQ discrimination and violence in the context of their time and service is really hard, but also created a space where they don't feel alone, and they're doing it, you know. It's just open up the room, like this little Zoom room, and they're creating this beautiful community. So thinking about like congregational work, it's almost like this group is like building that sort of beloved community that we talk about all the time, creating that space where they're able just to be together, to lament their experiences, but also to kind of provide healing to one another and to themselves. And so that has just been a really life-giving space for me, having that weekly meeting and then just journeying with them kind of on individually as well. And I just to kind of end that, they all kind of created such a nice connection with each other that one of them hosted a drag party in their backyard, and they all went. They all had a little party together for Pride Month. And some of them had never been around other LGBT people that they knew of in person, right? Like maybe they had a spouse, but they weren't going to be around other queer people. It was just like this amazing thing that they could kind of break into that, to feel proudly, you know, their veteran selves, proudly their LGBTQ selves, and just feel like they're the full welcome, right, of all parts of their identity, and to enjoy like a great show. So that's a real joy. And of course, there's, as Rena was saying, you know, a lot of grief all the time, just lots of grief. And you know, I think a lot of the work of the chaplain is often suicide prevention, in terms of making those assessments and providing space for them to share. So yeah, mental health concerns are very, very prevalent. Yeah, I think I'll end it there.
Thank you so much. Chris and Liz, is there anything else you would like to share before we move into to questions and answers?
I mean, just to echo the importance of self-care, and I'm a bike commuter. I ride my bike about 20 miles a day, 10 miles to the hospital and 10 miles home. And that's an important part of my self-care. Also, there's always like something to do. There's always another patient to see. There's always a million ways to be busy in this kind of institution. It's chronically anxious. There's always external measures, like, you know, these people need to be seen within 2 weeks. These people need to be seen within 7 days of admission. And that stuff is soul crushing for me. So I basically just don't like pay attention to it. So, I mean, my supervisor puts up with it, but if I were to run around, like, you know, trying to keep up with spiritual assessments to make sure this person was seen, and I would not survive here. So for me, it's about figuring out what gives me vitality. Where can I, you know, what is mine to do, and where can I make a significant impact, and focusing on that. And that's how I've been able to continue. It's hard. I mean, it's hard work. And just a quick story. I mean, I got a call from a veteran who'd been through our group. He's from Vietnam era. He was in Vietnam as a Ranger. And he's like, you know, I'm waking up at 4 in the morning and I'm feeling this angst, and I can't quite pinpoint it, but I wake up thinking, oh, you know, where are my men? And they're coming to arrest me. So I said, well, why don't you come in and we can talk about it. And I serve tea, I make coffee, you know, I make myself available to people so they can feel hospitality. And over the course of 90 minutes, he proceeded to tell me a story he'd never told anyone in 76 years, which was about basically being the lead of a Ranger team of 12 in the jungle, and opening fire on a group he thought was a threat. It turned out to be a funeral procession, and they killed everybody, and there were 12 they killed in the funeral procession. They lied to the command about what had happened. They said they were ambushed. But everybody in his Ranger regiment was 12. It was a team of 12, and he was the lead, and they're all dead. He's the only one left alive. And so he's been waking up at 4 in the morning thinking, where are my men? And they're coming to arrest me because he's the only one left. And he has this sense of like karma, like it's judgment, you know, my judgment day is coming and I'm the only one left to be punished for this. So, I mean, that's kind of intense, right? I mean, you can't just, there's no quick fix. So, I mean, you got to be, I mean, to be able to sit with that and hold that and kind of work through that with people is part of the work. Because who else is this, you know, veteran going to go to with that kind of dilemma, right? I mean, that's, it's easy to kind of, I think, in these kind of institutions to kind of lose sight of who you are as a chaplain and like what your lane is. I mean, you can get pulled in many different directions, and but for me, it's really important to stay grounded in what is mine to do and who am I. I'm the chaplain and I provide spiritual care. There's other people who can do social work. There's other people who do therapy, but you know, this is what I'm here to do, and this is what I can do well, and that means saying no to a lot of things. So to be able to kind of have a sense of clear boundaries And that's how I'm able to keep this ministry sustainable and not burn out.
Thank you. That's really important. Oh, I so appreciate your vulnerability and your sharing, all of you, and your just depth of experience in the work that you do in the ministry that you do. It's so important. We're going to move into questions and answers. And I know, Patty, that you had a question about volunteering, so I'll let you go first.
Thank you, actually. And in the meantime, I thought of another question, so if I can slip in the two. Yes, my first question was about, and it was interesting to hear you say that every facility is different, so you can't really give blanket answers. But my question was about volunteering as a chaplain, not wanting to be on the paid staff, but are there opportunities for any kinds of volunteering for spiritual support? And then the other question was, I think some of my own question about this is whether the people that you serve have a sense of, if you yourself haven't been in the military, especially if you haven't seen combat, you don't understand, you don't get it, what we've been through. Do folks who don't have military experience still have something to offer veterans or their families? Thanks for anything you can give on those two questions.
I'd like to answer the question about volunteering and maybe Liz heard. There are no volunteer chaplains, and there definitely should not ever be volunteer chaplains in the VA medical system. And I'll tell you why. I mean, you just heard about how like much training is required and how much credentialing and how much certification. The last thing we need is like volunteer chaplains without that training, without this certification, without that accountability, coming in here and proselytizing and then just like jeopardizing the whole institution of the chaplaincy in a federal institution. The chaplaincy has already been sued by people who argue on separation of church and state that there ought not be federally employed chaplains in the VA Medical Center or even in the military in that sense. So we're walking in very delicate ground here as federal employees who are also religious clergy, and we have to protect this the chaplain service from people who don't quite get it. Like they don't quite get ministry in a pluralistic setting. I'm not saying that you'd be like this, but once you like open the floodgates to volunteers, I mean, it becomes very difficult to make sure that that you're holding that balance between free exercise and no establishment, right? That you're not like pushing spirituality or religion on people who don't want it. And that's why, no volunteers. Maybe my colleagues have something else to say about that. But
yeah, I was going to say that's my understanding, is that's the policy. You know, we have fee-basis chaplains who work on, you know, a reduced schedule, but they have to have all the requirements of a staff chaplain, or training rather. Yeah. And yeah, to Chris's point, the freedom of and freedom from religion within VA, and I think kind of the federal system in general, is really emphasized. Yeah. And then your other question, or Rena, did you want to add to that? I'm sorry.
Well, I was just going to say it's very interesting because VA chaplains are the only people who are allowed to offer sacraments or even prayer, which really comes as a surprise because there are many staff people, there are many nurses or other staff people who think that they can pray. If somebody wants prayer, they're going to pray. So when we're doing our kind of, you know, introduction to chaplaincy for staff, like at a grand rounds or something, and we're presenting that, people, a lot of staff can be shocked that, oh, chaplains are the only people who can even offer prayer. And that's because we're trained to offer it in different contexts according to what the veteran is calling for.
And to your second question, Patty, so I'm a civilian. I did not serve in the military. You know, many of us perhaps could say, you know, we had family members who served. I did. But I wouldn't say I grew up in a family where that was the emphasized culture at all. I did grow up in Western Pennsylvania, so there is kind of, I did grow up around a lot of folks who were veterans or eventually did join the military. But I have found that most of the time, the veterans that I meet aren't all that concerned. As long as you're kind of offering them space to kind of share these stories and you're not going to kind of flinch in horror or flinch in fear of them, that you can go to the depths with them, right? Like I find that that conveys a lot of trust. I think there are folks who probably maybe would feel, it's a spectrum. We're all human beings. Some folks may feel like, well, if you weren't in the service, I don't know if I want to talk to you. But I haven't noticed that to be a predominant attitude at all. I have found that an openness, and it's not something I really discuss unless they ask. Really just try to, I'm here to be your chaplain. So that seems to work out okay. I don't know if Chris or Rena have had other experiences. I know, Chris, you're a veteran, but yeah.
I'm the daughter of a combat veteran and I'm civilian. So I, like Liz, I did not grow up in a heavily military cultured home. I haven't gotten much pushback at all. On occasion, I still will get a male veteran saying, "Oh, you're a minister, you're a chaplain because I'm female identified." So I get that sometimes still. Not very often. I would say that, and I work more with men than I do with women, but I would say, for the trauma that a lot of the men that I work with have lived through, they sometimes even request to have a woman chaplain because that feels safer to them.
Yeah, Rena, I get called the lady chaplain every once in a while.
Lady, please, lady
The
chaplain.
lady chaplain, yeah.
I would just add that for veterans to ever be fully integrated or reintegrated into the culture, it's essential that they have meaningful relationships with people who are not veterans. And unfortunately, what sometimes the VA can just reinforce that kind of sense of isolation and distance. I think what matters is not so much whether, as a provider or a chaplain, you're a veteran or not a veteran, but that you're willing to share responsibility. And that even if you weren't in the military, if you're a citizen of the United States, your hands are dirty. You're implicated in the violence of this country. And if you can like acknowledge that and kind of be willing to kind of own some of that, that maybe you weren't the trigger puller, but your tax dollars paid for the bullets, and your political inactivity led to whatever, or your consent or your lack of dissent. So in that sense, there's a sense of kind of we're in this together. I think if you're going in with a mindset of like projected valorization, like you're a hero, or of course there's periods of demonization that have come through in our denomination's past, or even just I'm here to help you. I don't think that it's about it. I think it's about the relationship and being honest about who's in the room, who are you in the room in that relationship. And you may not be a veteran, but most of us have some connection to through the fa for our family members, but also we have some relationship to violence through our s citizenry and just being part of this system.
Chris, any other quick questions? We still have a few minutes. Yeah, Eleanor.
Hi. Thank you, everybody. And I'm
already a chaplain in hospital and have met the requirements. But I really, other than having met a bunch of several people in the Washington area that I know work for the VA and are enthusiastic and like the work a lot. But other than US jobs, how do we get a foot in the door if we're interested? And particularly for me, I'd be probably more interested in part-time just because I am already juggling a few different PRN things that I like, but I don't want to, this could really be all encompassing. It could take over my whole life. But I would still love to learn kind of how to work my way in, at least to have the opportunity. And I am expecting in a matter of days my board certification. So that's my next step.
So at RVA, we do not have part-time chaplains. As Liz stated, we have fee-based chaplains, primarily our Roman Catholic chaplains. And we have a full-time chaplain who is Jewish, but we also have a fee-based Jewish chaplain who comes one day a week. So that's not so much a thing at RVA.
Okay.
Yeah, we have a couple of folks who, by virtue of being there for many years, have kind of reduced their hours a bit, but I think that's a different situation than what you're talking about, Eleanor. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the fee basis opportunities are out there. I know our fee basis folks typically will work the on-call schedule, mm-hmm. So doing kind of overnights and that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. But yeah, really, Rena and I went the route of doing our residencies in the VA, and that's kind of how we got our foothold in. But yeah, for fee basis or other things, I think it's primarily having a relationship with someone that's giving you a heads up about it or looking on USA Jobs. I don't know if Chris has other thoughts.
So searching on USA Jobs is where to find the official openings.
Yeah, I mean, in my case, like, I wanted to get into the VA system. I was living in New York. I applied, and I got hired for a part-time GS-11 position in Philadelphia. And so I'm like, okay, well, I'll commute and see how that goes. And it went well. And eventually, actually, it went so well, they wanted to hire me full time. And I said, well, thank you, but I'll take a GS-12 somewhere else. And so then they kind of like upped it to a GS-12, which is, like, if you don't know, it's the pay scale. So if you're willing to travel.
I live near Washington, so I hear a lot of the terminology.
If you're willing to travel, I mean, the VA is nationwide. And if you're willing to travel to get into the VA system, and then you can get established and then move to a new position with a higher pay grade or maybe full time. I mean, that was the path for me. I mean, we haven't talked about this a lot, but I've seen a real trend, and it concerns me and my colleagues, of chaplain positions being downgraded. Like now, like GS-9, 10, you can see like chaplain positions being advertised at a GS-10 or a GS-11 level, CP resident, like CP supervisors at a GS-12. I mean, this is kind of concerning. Maybe it's something more to address with Sarah in terms of her own advocacy within the system, but it's possible to really be exploited, I think, by the system, that you could end up like a per diem and not have benefits and not get retirement and just, get used. It's like being an adjunct professor or something like that. So I think that's something just to be careful about. I'm a full-time federal employee, GS-12. I have a permanent position. It has great benefits, federal benefits, and you earn leave and sick leave, vacation leave, get retirement pay, those kinds of things aren't generally extended if you're coming in just fee basis. I mean, it's so that's, I think that's just something to pay attention to.
Thanks. Well, thanks, everybody. It looks like we're a couple minutes over. You can reach out to me if you have further questions, and I can see if I can get answers for you. slammert@uua.org. I'll put that in the chat. And I'd be happy to put you in touch with one of these chaplains to have further conversation, or you can talk to me. Thanks for coming.
Thank you to Liz and to Rena and to Chris and Sarah for making this available for all of us here and those who will watch it later. We really appreciate you sharing your experience and knowledge. Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
It was nice to see everyone tonight.
Yeah, good to be with you all. Thank you.
Thanks for coming.